Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, John Dunford. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1237, we present a new story from Frankie Diaz. On tonight's show, we feature an excerpt from The Taste of Water, a novel, a richly layered book written by new writer Frankie Diaz. Frankie Diaz grew up in a small village near Mangalore, India. At the age of 21, he moved to Mumbai and worked as a bank officer. Later posted to Goa for 5 years, he wrote and produced a musical, then moved to Dubai, where he worked in international banking and wrote a column for the local newspaper. He's fluent in Konkani, Kannada, Tulu, Hindi, and English. In 1990, he and his wife, along with their daughter and son, then 3 and 6 years old, moved to Toronto, Canada. Frankie Diaz spends his time composing music, writing, and lives between Canada, India, and the south of France. On tonight's program, you will meet Grace D'Souza, who has learned that her husband, Joachim, has died in a car accident. Slipping between delirium and lucidity, Grace examines her life, questioning the purpose of leading a good life, and even God. Let's listen now to Soliloquy of Grace, an excerpt from The Taste of Water, written by Frankie Diaz, read for tonight's program by Glory Callis.
Soliloquy of Grace, an excerpt from The Taste of Water, written by Frankie Diaz, read by Lori Callis. The dogs started howling and wouldn't let up on the morning of the 25th of May. The cows hadn't eaten their hay, and their eyes were watery. Grace D'Souza was convinced by these signs that something awful had happened. She whispered a silent prayer, but the terrible news arrived around 4 in the afternoon anyway. A serious accident had taken place. Very early in the morning, an unseasonable drizzle had rendered the mountain road slippery. Joachim D'Souza was returning home from the coffee estate when his jeep slid off a precipice, tumbling nearly 400 feet into the gorge. He died instantly. Gopal, his cook, rushed to Upal with the news. There was stunned silence. Struggling to fathom the news, Grace dropped to the floor as if her entire frame had turned to jelly. Her daughters wept uncontrollably. They cried until they had no more tears left. The neighbors gathered and revived Grace by splashing cold water on her face. She opened her eyes, tried to speak, and then went into convulsions. Meena Ray ran home to fetch a bottle of herbal cachet. She fed 2 spoonfuls to Grace, whereupon she relaxed and fell into a deep sleep. Grace awoke about 6 hours later and heard the drone of the ocean. She felt as if she was floating on top of the waves. As a child, she used to visit her aunt's place in Surathkal, about 1/2 mile inland from the shore, where the constant drone of the ocean could be heard at all times of the day and night. Her cousins had lived in Surathkal all their lives and were oblivious to the sound, but Grace had found it fascinating and strangely soothing. In bed at night, she had felt as though she was lying on top of the waves. During overnight storms, the sea roared like an angry lion, and the children would run to the ocean in the morning and watch waves crash onto the rocks. Grace had loved to catch the salty spray on her tongue and breathe in the warm fragrance of the sea. Slipping between delirium and lucidity, Grace suddenly realized that the drone was not from the ocean, but the solemn and melancholic recitation of the rosary by 30 women and children. Their sad, subdued voices rose and fell in waves of grief. Propped up on pillows, she lay on a couch that had been placed in a corner of the hall. Her daughters Sophie, Monica, and Rosie swayed around her like tender banana plants uprooted in a storm. In the middle of the hall, in front of the altar, Joachim's body was laid out. "I'm not quite sure if I'm awake or in a dream," Grace thought as she quietly surveyed the scene. it looks as though the ladies of the village, led by the Alvarez girls and Mina Ray, have taken over the management of the house. The candles are burning and the flowers have arrived. The men must have taken charge of the body and washed and dressed it. Joachim is in his black suit that I had dry cleaned at the Dobie for the Feast of Our Lady. Ah, the rosary will go on, and we will be flooded with prayers and hymns for the next 24 hours until the funeral. But what is the point? Joachim is not coming back like Lazarus. I wonder what happened to Lazarus when he came back. Did he remember heaven? Did he want to come back at all? Did someone tell him that God had changed his mind? Was he dragged kicking and screaming and shoved down a manhole to this wretched earth? Whatever Lazarus had to say would have been the most important information for mankind. He was the only one who had ever returned from the dead. Somebody should have spoken to him. The evangelists should have carefully recorded every word he had spoken for the Bible. That is what Albert, my bright, attractive, broken, banished cousin, used to say. Where is Albert when I need him? When he had returned from the seminary and started saying those awful things about the church and the priests, I was the one who gave Albert the money for his ticket and dispatched him to Bombay. In a big city, many people think like him, and he would not do as much damage. Here in this small village, the very fabric that holds us together would have been torn apart by such talk. All the same, there was some truth to what he said. He was convinced that God does not care about our prayers, that we keep groveling and irritating him when we mindlessly repeat the same things over and over again. Albert read a great deal. He read the entire Bible. That is dangerous, reading the entire Bible. I've been told it should be done only by very holy people, only by those who are unshakable in their faith. Albert kept saying the holy book was full of violence, fornication, and revenge. I know he was telling the truth. That was one thing about Albert. He was always upright and honest to a fault. He was very bright. In grade 3, he knew all the lessons of grade 7. Father Nerona noticed him, and he was selected. He was chosen and sent away to Mangalore to that hostel run by the priests. All his expenses were paid, because he had a bright future, or so we were told. Bright future, my arse. They finished him. I can't blame Father Nerona. He was a holy man and meant well. But about Father Martis, the less said the better. It is difficult to believe what that priest did to Albert and to those other boys. The bishop just kept transferring him from one place to another. Apparently they cannot fire a priest. The bishop should have excommunicated him, but that is never done. It is much easier to close their eyes and hope the problem will go away, that the problem will be forgotten. On the other hand, it's not fair to force celibacy on the priests. With all the good food and easy living, no wonder they are horny. The longest time that Joachim stayed away at the estate was for 3 months. And when he arrived home, oh my God, he came with an enormous appetite. I used to shudder just thinking of him coming home with such passion, such urgency. That is all gone now. He is not coming back. He is lying straight as an arrow in his dark suit, white shirt, maroon tie, and his hunter's boots. I would have suggested that they look in the cabinet and fish out his black Bata shoes. But I don't care anymore. How silly. He is dead and gone, lying there ramrod straight without a care in the world. And here I am thinking that he might look better in his black shoes than in his hunting boots. He had no business leaving us now. He could have waited a few years longer, until after Victor had completed university, and after Sophie had married. It would have been easier on all of us. He is comfortably dead, but what am I supposed to do now? How am I supposed to manage? Go out and start a whorehouse? Is this what I get for leading a good life? Is this what I get for resisting temptations? What is more is I did my best to ensure modesty and virtue in Upal. When the Alvarez girls were growing up and running around with their breasts bouncing about like pairs of restless puppies, I was the one who got the tailor Alphonse to make 4 pairs of tight brassieres. I gave them to the girls and advised them on the basics of modesty. I gave them cotton napkins and taught them everything they needed to know about feminine hygiene. Their Aunt Aggie was totally oblivious about these things, and the girls did not have a clue. They were blooming into solid women, and their lively breasts would have been temptations to all of the men in the village. Men are easily tempted. A man, with his pecker, can go about without a care in the world, but a woman has to be careful. A woman is an accident waiting to happen. Was it really an accident, or did Joachim kill himself? He was worried about the business, after all. Things were not going well. He should not have gotten into the coffee bean business in the first place. I warned him about Ben Ashenoy, that partner of his. I never liked him. He had grand ideas and a big mouth. I told Joachim that Big Ben was all fart and no shit. "Now that's a good one," he laughed, and added, "When your luck really sucks, your own dick becomes a snake and bites you in the ass." He was realizing there were major problems, but it was too late. Too late to undo contracts. They had bought the coffee beans at very low prices. They had reckoned prices could not go down any further, but the market had crashed, and they were forced to sell at a huge loss. They could not hold on to the coffee beans. With all the heat and dampness, the beans would have turned to dust. Ashes to ashes, dust to dust, mud to mud. Fighting with the mud, wrestling with the earth, that is what my father-in-law has done for his entire life. Like Job, Zoel Manuel has been tested all his life. Job was devoted to God, and still God teased him and tested him mercilessly. My father-in-law does not need these tests at this stage of his life. He lost 2 sons when they were little boys. Now Joachim is gone. I don't like a God who sets up tests when he is the only one who knows the outcomes. The Lord is my shepherd, and the shepherd happily dispatches his sheep for slaughter for the feast.
That was Lori Callas reading Soliloquy of Grace, an excerpt from The Taste of Water, written by Frankie Diaz. Visit the publications section of the Life Rattle website to read more about this Life Rattle publication. This concludes Life Rattle number 1237. My name is John Dunford. Lori Callas read and recorded this excerpt from The Taste of Water, written by Frankie Diaz. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Ackman. Tune into Life Rattle next Thursday evening to hear more new stories.